This is F1 Debrief. That is an optimistic agenda. On this show, we discuss the ultimate Formula One gathering, a questionable Lotus entry, and a race that surprised everyone. It is technically still 2014, just, but we are looking ahead to 2015, even a little bit of 2016.
Today we are all about the FIA and their rule changes and meddling for this coming year and years that follow.
They do like to meddle, the FIA. Some of it is regulation things that probably do need changing. Some of it is things you can't have a Formula One season without, like the entry list.
Okay, do we know who signed up? Who is officially confirmed? Is it all still provisional?
A provisional list was released in early November, which was only really interesting because it did still have both Marussia and Caterham on there. Although Marussia, I think, are now known as Manor, or that's what they are on the entry list. Anyway, They were both subject to confirmation. An updated list with added driver names was released on the 22nd of December, and that still has both Manor and Caterham, but both are now highlighted as subject to confirmation. And Lotus have also been downgraded to have that little asterisk.
What do we know why that might be? Have they not paid the required fees?
I have no idea.
Why would Lotus suddenly become questionable? There's nothing unstable about the team, is it? They're looking for new employees. They seem to be a team who are looking to move up the grid, not someone who might be in question.
Yeah, I don't know. It might just be a technicality. I'm sure they're going to be there next year. Hamilton has his number as 44 because he said he didn't want to take the number one, even though he is the world champion. Right, he wants to stick with that 44.
Vettel ran with number one last year. But I guess Hamilton, he does like 44. He's obviously got the tattoo. And I believe he had to petition the team for the right to continue using his number, because obviously they, for marketing purposes, wanted the number one on their chassis.
For what it's worth, Vettel is listed in front of Raikkonen, or ahead of him in the list. It could be because he finished ahead of him in the championship this year, as opposed to any actual seniority in the team. And the same goes for Alonso, ahead of Button at McLaren. For the new numbers, we knew that Nasser was going to be number 12. Carlos Sainz Jr. is 55 and Max Verstappen 33. These kids loving their double digits.
That works well. Yeah, that is semi-memorable. 55, 33, 12.
12.
Yeah, Nasser's is going to be the hardest one to remember from that, I imagine. So make sure you lock those into your memory banks. You're going to need those a lot this coming year.
Talking of the coming year, the calendar, it's 21 races. That's long. Our traditional stance is, oh, it's too long. It's too long. We want 16 back. We don't need to go over that. The real shocker, I think, with the calendar for 2015 is that Korea is potentially coming back.
It came as a shock to those in Korea. Anyone, organisers of the Mokpo event were taken by surprise. It was complete news to them. Also, there was rumours of a Seoul street race, and those organisers aren't prepared or ready to run an event in 2015. So where the South Korean Grand Prix might be is open to question.
So they don't want it back, and we don't want it to come back. Who actually wants it? Just Bernie, probably.
Yeah, but there is even confusion within the FIA, because I think this week a second provisional calendar was released, and the title of the document said there would be 21 races next year, but Korea was missing. There was only actually 20 listed. So there's chaos and confusion in France as well. It's an odd event. I can't imagine where it could be run. I can't imagine why it would want to be run. There was a suggestion that by including 21 races on the calendar, it would enable teams to run 5 engines instead of their restricted 4 power units. And that might be a good thing, given the unreliability issues we've had and the hurdles that engine manufacturers have to overcome in order to make 4 units last an entire season. So adding 21 races, or making it 21 instead of 20, might enable that rule that would give them one more power unit and make everybody's life a bit easier. But I think even the FIA dismissed that as an unlikely event.
The actual new race in 2015 is Mexico, which is one of those that's been rumoured for so long, I really thought it was never coming.
But it might this year. Supposedly it is going to happen. Which will please Force India, who have got Sergio Perez in their team. I think they're doing their car launch in Mexico as well. So it's a big year for that country in Formula One. It's obviously had a race before. I don't remember it. I have no recollection of a Grand Prix running there. Maybe we'll have to dig up some highlights if we can find some that have been taken off of YouTube. It looks like a Grand Prix worth looking forward to, unlike, say, Sochi this year.
Yeah, Russia is still on the calendar.
Boo! Will it be any better? Maybe Pirelli can make more aggressive tyre choices this year and improve the show for us.
Also, talking of the calendar, there's no more double points at the end of the year. And I guess we just all pretend that that never happened.
I didn't know anything about it. No one ever mentioned it, strangely.
In the 2015 regulations, there are a lot of changes regarding the safety car, starting with the fact there are no more standing safety car restarts. Did we even see one of those?
No, it was suggested midway through 2014 that it would be a fine idea that whenever the safety car was called and cars queued up behind it, that in order to ramp up the excitement of a Grand Prix, the start would be reenacted. So cars would form on the grid and then they would reenact the initial first lap drama. Which is fine. We know that the opening lap and the first corner of a Grand Prix is likely to be the highlight of any event. And so I can see the logic in perhaps suggesting, why don't we just do that several times in any Grand Prix?
The drivers weren't happy with it, though. There were a lot of complaints that it was unfair to put that pressure on them when perhaps someone had fought really hard to move up the grid and then had to do a start and would probably drop back again.
It definitely opened up some questions in terms of the racing line, because once a Grand Prix gets underway, a clear racing line appears on one side of the track. Depending on the layout and the format of the circuit, it would vary from one side to the other. But if the safety car standing restart was called, say 70% through the race, there will be a clear racing line, a good side to be on, and a non-racing line. And if it was a wet event, you could end up with a dry side of a track and a wet side of a track. So it brought in a lot of variables which could be perceived to be unfair. And so that is, but it was introduced and then it was immediately dropped. And we'll never know if it was a good idea.
We won't talk about that one either.
Don't mention that. No. Don't mention it. No.
The virtual safety car was trialled a couple of times during the latter half of the season, and that is going to be officially introduced. The FIA say it will normally be used when double-waved yellow flags are needed on any section of track and competitors or officials may be in danger, but the circumstances are not such as to warrant use of the safety car itself. So my understanding of this is they started out with just trialling limiting the speeds in the specific sector of track, like a yellow flag section.
Mm-hmm.
But drivers weren't very happy with that because slowing down suddenly to try and meet the goal was actually quite dangerous anyway. So yep. Then they extended it to be the whole lap, and that seems to have eased concerns. So there's a whole track limit. And I get that, but then it just becomes a safety car. So why not just bring out the safety car? Or if you like this new virtual safety car thing, why do you need the safety car at all? Just always go for a virtual safety car.
IndyCar has something similar to this, I think, and perhaps it's also used in NASCAR, and that's a full course caution. That's essentially what they're bringing in, which Formula One has not had to date. You have yellow flag zones, which is a section of the track where cars slow down, and it's open all hours on the rest of the circuit. Formula One drivers sometimes need looking after, because in a yellow flag zone, you have to show that you slow, but there's no specific requirement to slow to a certain delta. And that, as we saw in the case of Bianchi and Suzuka, led to a pretty serious accident. So these changes are essentially good in theory. We'll have to see how they work in practice. You're right that a virtual safety car could potentially replace the safety car entirely. But there is one circumstance, I guess, when if there's a lot of debris on track, if it's a big accident, the safety car can lead the pack around or through a safer section of the track. For example, the safety car could redirect cars down a pit lane if there was a major accident on a pit straight, for example, which the virtual safety car couldn't do because there's no one to follow.
Yeah, it's just a speed limit as opposed to follow me directly.
I'm not sure what happens if you do bring out this VSC and then you decide later that you need the safety car. Therefore, all the cars need to catch up with the safety car.
Yeah.
So they're all going around at a set speed, and then what do? Are they allowed to speed up? It's tricky. There's more. I have many questions about this.
We're going to have to see how it goes.
I do feel that the idea is heading in the right direction. It seems like this is important. They've done the trials. They've tried various options, and they've narrowed it down to this one solution, which the drivers think is the best of the available options.
Safety car regulations have been evolving a lot over the past few years. One of the most recent introductions was the lapped cars being able to overtake, and then we had to wait for them to go all the way around the back of the pack and join again.
Massive delays. It causes so many problems.
It wasn't a lot of fun. Well, now the lapped cars do still overtake, but the rest of the pack don't have to wait for them to join up again before they get going. Presumably they'll just wait for a couple of corners.
So it gets the back markers out of the way of the lead battle, but it doesn't delay, doesn't require them to do an entire lap to join the back, which is the biggest problem, I think. So this is a compromise. It's a halfway house. They get out the way enough. They're still going to, the leaders are still going to catch them very quickly.
Yeah.
But they don't get in the way of the first two or three corners, which are often the most important and most significant following a safety car.
There have been some tweaks to the penalties as well. Some are a bit harsher, some are more lenient. It's an interesting mix. Team personnel on the grid, after the 15-second signal, gets the driver a pit lane start.
Which is a major change.
That seems really harsh.
It was before, it was a penalty during the race, right?
Yes, a drive-through or something. Mm. I don't. It doesn't happen very often.
Well, you can see why this is keen to be discouraged, because live personnel on the track whilst cars head off for their formation lap, not ideal, not a safe situation. Make the penalties harsh and make sure teams really, really respect that warning.
A penalty that appears to have been made less harsh is the unsafe releases in the pit lane. Now they will get a 10-second stop-go penalty in the same race, whereas I think they used to get a grid penalty for the next event as well as in-race drive-throughs and things like that.
We certainly raised questions earlier this year that the changes to this regulation were harsh. Drivers were suffering mid-race, and then that penalty was carried over and they were suffering at the next race too. Now, again, the FIA were keen to ensure that unsafe releases were respected, were limited and reduced, and the penalty for that was needed to be harsh, but perhaps they went too far with their requirement to carry on those penalties to the next event.
Carrying forward penalties also seems to be getting less popular, because this year we've had a lot of crazy situations where a driver gets an engine power unit penalty, and if they can't take that full 10 place drop, the remaining positions carry forward to the next race.
Yes, which is massively confusing. It's very hard to keep track of who's got a penalty, and it does seem unfair that from one event to the next, you know, you have a problem in a previous event and then you still suffer three races down the line.
Yeah, well, they've got rid of that. Now any grid drops that you don't take will be converted into a drive-through penalty or a 5-second stop-go, depending how many we'll have to take.
That seems to make sense.
All happens in the same weekend. The FIA also have, or the stewards also have, a 10-second penalty available now, as well as the 5-second penalty.
Which, the 5-second penalty has worked out incredibly well. I think that's a great rule change. Drive-throughs were always deemed to be very harsh for minor infringements, but bringing cars in and adding 5 seconds to any pit stop has worked out very well when those cars and those drivers have actually respected the 5-second regulation.
I hadn't realised that this was a bit of a controversy, but Force India were complaining that Toro Rosso had started working on their car before the 5 seconds was up at one of the races. Mm. So the FIA are now going to step up their monitoring of the pit lane. Autosport say the FIA intends to ask teams to submit live wheel speed and suspension load data to race control during pit stops to monitor them in real time and ensure no shortcuts when drivers are serving penalties. So they're going to monitor all the pit stops in a race. That is like a full-time job.
Well, they only have to monitor those drivers that are awarded a 5-second penalty. So it's not a vast amount, unless a lot of people do a lot of things wrong,
yeah,
and garner a lot of penalties. But teams have to pass that information across the FIA. It's a lot of data. Presumably from all four wheels, all four suspension points, and from every stop. And so presumably the FIA can deal with it all, but at least they can definitely make absolute rule decisions. It will be very clear whether or not 5 seconds or now the 10 seconds have elapsed when required, and there should be no question.
Anything that stops Force India complaining is fine by me.
Well, no. I think they were right to complain about the Verne stop, because if Toro Rosso had begun working before the 5 seconds had elapsed, they are making a gain. And I think the FIA had relied on teams simply not bending the rules.
Which is a stupid thing to
actually
do.
Actually, in hindsight, was a really crazy belief to put that much faith in teams. And eventually somebody would bend those rules. And it looks like Toro Rosso were at least the first to be spotted doing so.
I just wanted to highlight the last thing on penalties. There was an interesting Q&A with Gary Connolly, one of the stewards, on the FIA website. You don't get to hear much from the stewards, so I just wanted to recommend having a look. It's not hugely long or in-depth, but he did say some interesting things like, I think the major change this year for us has been the introduction of the 5-second penalty, because in the past we sometimes struggled to impose a penalty that suited certain transgressions. No driver is ever happy to be penalised, but they certainly like the 5-second penalty better than the drive-through.
Understandably.
And also regarding track limits, which were often a topic of discussion this year. What happens is that the stewards rely on what the race director has advised is or is not acceptable. In Austria, we were advised that for turn 7 and 8, it was not going to be acceptable to go off the track during qualifying, and that if you did go off track, that time would be disallowed. The teams all had adequate warning, and the stewards acted accordingly. So basically what you're saying is, don't blame us, blame Charlie.
Well, let's do that. I'm fine to do that. Yep, I'm happy with that. It's a tricky, tricky situation, track limits, because you make a rule, you make a judgment call. Therefore, fans realise, you know, they understand it, they make sense. They see those limits being implemented, drivers respect them, or they get the penalty. And then you go to the next race thinking you understand, okay, track limits, rules have been changed, this is what they are. And then drivers go sailing off track, left, right and centre, and they don't get a penalty at the next event. And it can be very hard to keep track of and very hard to fathom as a viewer. And I think there should be more consistency, but making, you know, enforcing that consistency without ruining racing entirely is a very tricky balance.
But it's also one of those penalty situations which is so obvious because there is a white line and you can't argue it one way or the other. You know, racing incidents and whether drivers get penalised for crashes and stuff, you could debate that forever, but there is a specific white line, and if you cross it, then you are off track.
Very, very true. I can't argue with that, but I will. Well, I can. I will throw one curveball into the mix, and that is, we saw Sebastian Vettel and Fernando Alonso going at it at Silverstone this year. It was an amazing, epic bout of passing, attempted passing, and finally overtaking. Sebastian Vettel was chasing down Alonso, and it was amazing to watch. It was one of the highlights of the year. I think we picked it. We've talked about it in previous shows. And I think it was exceptional racing and an exceptional viewing. And if at that point the FIA had stepped in and said, oh, you naughty boy, you went over the white line in that one incident, and we caught you, and therefore you're just going to have to back off and give that place up.
They both wanted that to happen, though.
Both drivers were calling it for it to happen because in their minds it's in the rules, but then they were both transgressing that same rule. Mm. I think if you were then to step in as the overseeing rulemakers and enforcers of what's right and what's wrong in Formula One, and if you come in and mess up that epic fight with your stupid little notebooks and your stupid little regulations, you know, I've got this little black book that says you should not cross this line, and therefore you are in the wrong, you're just going to take away what is the essence of motorsport. And that's the real, real tough thing. What actually is, what do people want to see? What is the best for the sport? And thus far, I think last year, the stewards did the best they could do under the circumstances. It was obvious in Austria there was time to be gained from one corner. It was a new circuit on the calendar. It could, you know, rumble strips could be added for next year to ease the situation. In the case of Silverstone, drivers exceeded track limits on occasion and they improved the show as a result of it, and therefore I don't think anything should be done.
A selection of other bits and pieces for next year and beyond then. The radio ban situation. It confused me for most of this year. It's probably going to continue to do so next year as well. They clamped down on it really hard when it seemed that drivers were getting too much help. Mm-hmm. Then it was slightly eased back and you weren't really sure what was allowed to be said and what wasn't. Even the teams were trying to be covert about things because they weren't sure what was legal or not. And now it seems like direct help is outlawed, but anything else is okay. I don't really know.
I don't know either. And I'm sort of in two minds about this one. I know this rule annoys you and the fact that it hasn't been fully implemented and the full ban didn't occur.
Well, just do it or don't do it.
Mm. And I think I'm in the same mind as you. It would be better if they just banned team-to-driver communication. Massa, I think, was the first of the F1 drivers to really come under scrutiny, as Rob Smedley used to basically talk him through every single corner of every single lap for an hour and a half. And it's only got worse since then. Once that was proved to actually be an effective way to get a driver around an event, it's now increased. And so all teams and all drivers do it. And it feels like, actually, the driver isn't doing very much at all. If you listen to the radio traffic, all the engineers backstage are doing their calculations and the analysis, and they're telling everybody how to get the most out of their package.
It's part of the way Formula One is at the moment, with having to save the life of everything. You know, you have to watch what your tyres are doing, you have to not use too much fuel and everything. So they want their drivers to be as ecological as possible, and the drivers don't really care one way or the other. They just want to go as fast as possible. So there must be a happy balance somewhere.
It feels like it hasn't been found.
Lots of what we've discussed so far has been, we'll see how it goes. They're just compromising. It's all up in the air. And there's more of that still to come.
Go on, what else you got?
The weight limit has been raised ever so slightly. There were lots of concerns about that and drivers starving themselves, and it didn't seem like a very good situation. So now, the weight of the car without fuel must not be less than 702 kilograms at all times during the event, up from 701 kilograms. A whole extra kilogram. You go out there and eat all those pies. The front of the cars are going to be a bit different. We've all got the stubby noses like Mercedes now instead of the pointy things that are best not discussed.
Really? I think we could all be grateful for this change. I know the regulations were, the changes that were proposed at the beginning of 2014 were done for a very good reason, and they weren't done correctly, and then loopholes were found. And my goodness, didn't that result in some ugly looking Formula One cars? Hopefully the changes this year, the FIA might have actually got it right, and we might end up with decent looking cars for finally, for the first time in years.
Yeah, maybe. Finally, the super license criteria will be changed for 2016 to include a minimum age limit of 18, a requirement for a valid driving license, and some kind of test for knowing the rules. They also have to have 2 years minimum running in junior categories and 300 kilometres required in F1 machinery.
Seems like an actual reasonable response to things like Science Junior and Verstappen being introduced to Formula One at a very young age. It's good the FIA have the power to do it. It seems like they've approached it logically. I don't know that there's necessarily a major problem with super young drivers coming in, but at the same time, you wouldn't want people compromising their education for the sake of Formula One, or Formula One allowing teams to push people into the sport before they're ready.
My favourite thing from the World Motorsport Council meeting was they were setting the next meeting for the strategy group, and they said it would focus on reducing costs, improving the show, making cars quicker and more difficult to drive, and reviewing the technical and sporting regulations with the aim of simplifying the rules where possible. But just do all of that, shall we?
Brilliant. Do it. Do everything you've been asked.
Yeah. You haven't managed to do it so far, but carry on.
That is an optimistic agenda.
One meeting.
Fix Formula One entirely. If any of those things could be addressed, that would be a major step forward, especially if they manage to do that without ruining anything else in the process.
I think the main problem at the moment, from that point of view, is the cost row, which is still ongoing. I think the teams were supposed to get together in December at some point to discuss it, but I haven't really heard anything about that. Mm-hmm. Eric Boullier summed it up pretty well. He said, if you look at the last decade, most of the teams were backed by car manufacturers who had no concern about how much they were spending. From 2010, teams began to lose this backing. So this is an issue. Do you want to put a development line down to keep costs down? Then you start to hurt the F1 industry. Or do you find another way to increase revenue? But doing that means changing the model and perhaps doing 25 races. I don't have the answer, he said. And does anyone?
He suggested 25 races.
Well, he was saying
that isn't the answer.
He's saying you'd have to change the model.
You probably do have to change the model. We know it's broken. The teams know it's broken. Well, some of them at least appreciate it.
Well, Manisha, she's obviously at Sauber and they are struggling. They're right in the heart of the situation. She said that changing the engines this year was expensive, but it was the right decision to keep F1 at the forefront of technology. Mm. But perhaps implementing it was wrong. Maybe they should have had a cost cap or taken an extra year to do it. So in the middle of the situation, they've got plenty of ideas, but it's trying to convince everyone else.
Yeah, and also there's rumours and suggestions that teams who are unhappy with their position in F1's pecking order in terms of power units will try and make some significant changes to engines for 2016. So you and I must go to a Formula One race this year, by the way, because I personally like the sound of the new cars. I prefer the less aggressive noise, and I would like to see them in person, especially if in 2016 they get thrown away and replaced by
louder things.
Something from the archive, let's say. This year, 2015 might be the year we have to make the effort and go to another Formula One race. Just for that reason alone, if nothing else. I genuinely like what they've done with the engines. I think it's an incredible achievement. I think Formula One should be proud of what it's done with energy recovery and with reducing the amount of fuel used per race. I'd love it if they could do even more. It does cost money. It costs a lot of money to innovate. The sport should be innovative. The way that the payments are distributed is very wrong, but it's not an easy thing to solve. I think there was Bernie Eccleston suggested he might just rip up all of the current agreements and start again. And actually, that isn't such a terrible idea.
That would work, yeah. If the strategy group can just fix that, improve the show, make the cars quicker and more difficult to drive, review the technical and sporting regulations, make everything more simple, and we'll meet back here in a bit to discuss it, I guess.
I'd watch it. I would definitely watch that next year. Oh, brilliant. Please do that. It should be a great meeting. Love to be a fly on the wall there. I think that's it for this show, and coincidentally for this year. We've had a fine run of 5 shows in 5 days.
Yeah, that wasn't intended, but it's worked out really well.
Mm. And I think now it's probably time to draw a close to SciPodcast in 2014.
Yep.
Our SciPodcast anniversary is coming up in a couple of days, which must mean we're heading into our 9th season of covering Formula One.
Yep.
Which is an incredible pleasure and privilege that we're allowed to do it, that we get to do this. Don't think that we don't know how lucky we are, and don't think that we ever take it for granted. It's been incredible. The stuff, we haven't done as much as we wanted to do, but we're sure as hell trying to make up for it now. We will endeavour to do much better next year, and then the year after that, and so on.
And you know what will help us do more is if you get in touch and tell us what you think about what we've discussed, about what we're doing, about what you expect 2015 and beyond to be like. You can call us 01212887225, email me christine@sidepodcast.com, or visit the form sidepodcast.com/contact.
It would make our new year if you got in touch. Community is vitally important to us. It does mean a lot. And I know we say this so much, but we really do appreciate your feedback. We had to make a lot of hard decisions this year. It's not decisions that we made lightly, but we do appreciate that people are still listening. People are still interacting. And we appreciate it very, very much. We look forward to hearing from you in 2015. Have a happy new year.
Happy new year.